In chapters 5 and 6 of Numbers, we read about the cleansing of the camp of God. You may recall that in the first 4 chapters of the book of Numbers, we have a description of the camp of Israel, where the tribes pitched their tent, where the tabernacle stood, the centrality of public worship, where the holy place was, and so on. A description of the geography of the camp of God. But the theme at chapter 5 now changes to that of the purging and the cleansing of the camp. And the first stage in the cleansing is the removal of 3 groups from the people of God and their banishment to a place outside the camp. And these 3 groups were, as you can see from the first 4 verses, first of all, the lepers, although apparently the Hebrew word used here is a general word for skin disease rather than a particular word for leprosy. There is another word for leprosy. It's a broad term for skin diseases, but lepers are included. Secondly, those suffering from discharges, what we might call long-term hemorrhages or other bodily emissions. And thirdly, those who had become unclean because they had been in contact with the dead. And this was the first step in removing defilement from the camp of God, the exclusion of lepers and those who suffered from bodily discharges and those who had been contaminated by touching the dead. I think there are 3 great realities here in these 4 verses. First of all, there is the vision of an undefiled camp. And secondly, that leads to the vision of an undefiled city. And thirdly, that leads to the gospel of Jesus Christ, which tells us how you can become part of the one and how you can be sure of a place in the other. First of all, there is a vision of an undefiled camp. There are people who find it a little severe that these poor souls should be shut out of the work of God through no apparent fault of their own. And there are folk, even in the churches, who try to explain away the exclusion of these 3 groups. It's argued, for example, that lepers are excluded because leprosy has always been regarded as a kind of horrible thing, largely due to the emaciation and the deformities that are associated with the disease. And it is argued that everywhere in every civilization, lepers have been kept in their place. And their place was away from normal society and away from normal life outside the camp in a desert place. You may recall that King Uzziah was king of Judah, but he was a leper because of his presumption and his trying to intrude into the priest's office. And so he became a leper. And although he was a king, a special house had to be built for him. And the Bible tells us that he lived in a leper house until he died. And if you know anything about some of the ancient medieval churches in Scotland, you'll know that many of the old medieval churches had leper windows, little slots in the stone through which these poor souls could look in from the outside to the worship going on the inside, but they couldn't come into the church because lepers were banished from the work of God. And so there is a natural aversion to leprosy. It's sometimes argued too that bodily discharges have always been associated in the popular mind with infection and the spreading of disease. If you know the Church of England Book of Common Prayer, or if you have a copy at home, you can turn it up. There still is a special service in the prayer book, and it's called A Service for the Godly Commination of Women After the Perils of Childbirth. And to us reading that nowadays, it is a most extraordinary service. Because childbirth involves bodily discharge of blood. And in older days, women were taken to church after childbirth, and they were not allowed to take part in normal society until they'd first been to church and had gone through a service of purification, a service for the godly commination of women. I think it says, after the deadly perils of childbirth. And it was only after they'd been to church that they were reinstated into the work of God. And if you think that's rather bizarre, then if you've time, read Leviticus chapter 15, because the whole of Leviticus chapter 15 is about rules regarding those who suffer from discharges. And thirdly, it's often argued by people who are not very happy about these first four verses in Numbers 5. It's argued that uncleanness through contact with the dead has a very long natural history. Some of you may recall that in the old days, not nowadays, after a funeral, the whole family came to church. And I'm old enough now to recall from my boyhood seeing entire pews, and sometimes several pews, filled with mourners in the kirk on the Sunday after a funeral. Now, they were not there to say thank you to the minister for his services. That wasn't the purpose of their being there. They were there to be cleansed from their contact with death. That strange, dark world had touched their lives, and somehow they had been contaminated by contact with the empire of death. And so they came to church for cleansing. You may also recall that it was part of Jeremiah's consecration that he was forbidden to go to funerals. God told him not to go to the house of mourning, lest he became unclean and therefore unfit for his prophetic ministry. And there's an even more touching story. It's the story of Ezekiel, whose wife died very suddenly. And the Lord prohibited Ezekiel from mourning for his wife. He was to be set apart from contact with the world of death, and that setting apart was part of his consecration. And so it's argued there are natural reasons for the exclusion of these people. But I wonder if these are the real reasons. Do you think that the real reasons are medical and hygienic? Well, they can't be. Because you see, it's a fact that leprosy is not a particularly infectious disease. You can live with lepers, and under normal social contacts, you will not catch the disease. You have to live in close contact with lepers for many years before you catch the disease. You perhaps know the great story of Father Joseph Damien, the Belgian priest who went to work amongst lepers. And it was years before he became, to his great joy, a leper himself. It's a lovely story. Whatever you believe about the rights or wrongs of Roman Catholic teaching, it's a very lovely story. It's a very Christian story. You see, Joseph Damien wasn't going to go to the mission field. It was his brother who was supposed to go to Hawaii as a missionary. But on the very eve of his departure, the brother fell ill with typhus fever. And so Joseph Damien stepped in and took the place of his brother on the mission field, and he went to Hawaii, and finally he ended on the island of Molokai, which is where the lepers were. It was the isle of their banishment. And Damien worked there, and for 16 years he identified himself with the lepers. And Wycliffe, in their very fine biographical dictionary of the Christian Church, Wycliffe point out that in the course of 16 years, Father Damien was the priest, the pastor to counsel them, he was the catechist to teach them, he was the preacher to tell them that Jesus loved them, he was the doctor, he was the nurse, he was the undertaker, he was the coffin maker, because their hands were so deformed they couldn't make coffins, so he made the coffins. And then he became the grave digger, because they couldn't dig the graves because of their emaciated hands. And then he became the head mason and the carpenter. All of that in 16 years for the love of Jesus, and he wasn't happy until the day he discovered he had become a leper. And now he really was one of them. He could talk their language and speak to their hearts. So you see, the lepers were not banished from the camp for medical or hygienic reasons. And in the same way, those suffering from discharges were not banished because of the fear of infection. And contact with the dead doesn't always lead to the spread of disease. You see, the real reasons for banishment were not medical and not hygienic. They were moral and spiritual. There is such a thing as moral and spiritual leprosy, and the Bible calls it sin. And it is sin that needs to be banished from the camp. There is such a reality as bleeding to death morally and spiritually. Did you know that you can hemorrhage spiritually? Our generation is very busy doing it right now. And spiritual hemorrhage is sin. And it's that that needs to be banished from the camp. And there is such a thing as being contaminated morally and spiritually by involvement with the kingdom of death. You see, the Bible doesn't think of death as a medical fact or a scientific fact. We think of death in a biological way, almost an automatic way. We say the heart stops, the lungs stops, the breathing stops, the brain activity stops, the person is dead. We think of death in a scientific way. But in the Bible, death is an empire that surrounds us, and it's forever pressing in on us and laying its claims on us and stealing our loved ones from us and bringing pain and anguish and suffering into our lives. And eventually the kingdom of death brings death into our lives. And there is such a reality as moral and spiritual death. And the Bible calls it sin. And it's that that needs to be removed from the camp. And this is why the lepers and the folk with discharges and those who were contaminated were put outside the camp. It was because they reminded Israel that God is a holy God, and he could come down and take up residence amongst his people only when sin had been banished from the camp. And the banishment of these three groups was really a kind of catharsis in the work of God. It was a cleansing, a release in the work of God. The purging of the camp was so that God himself could come down and live with his children and bless them and do them good. And that is the first vision here. An undefiled camp. And it is not too much to say that it is only when a fellowship has been cleansed like that, and when known sin has been banished to its proper place, which is the outside, it's only when that happens that God can come into the fellowship and bless it. And it is not too much to say that it is only when we have the courage to deal with sin in the camp that God can come in and bless us in a new and a living way. when the unbelief has been banished and the anger and the resentments and the petty jealousies and the wrong motives, when they've been sent to their proper place, God can come in and bless. You see, the price of blessing is the banishment of spiritual leprosy and spiritual hemorrhaging and spiritual death. And I want to say this kindly. If there is something in your life that is hindering the blessing of God coming down on this fellowship in a fuller way, in the name of God, I command you to stop it. If there's something in your life, if there's a malady, if there's a sickness, if there's something you're cherishing, and it's holding back the fullness of the blessing of God, in the name of God, I command you to stop it. Put it where it belongs. Outside the camp. The vision is of an undefiled camp. The second vision is of an undefiled city. Because in the book of Revelation, there are strange echoes of this picture of an undefiled camp in John's vision of the holy city, which used to be called by some of the old preachers the city four square, to describe its perfection. There used to be a very old American hymn from last century, where the verses spoke about going home to the city four square. Because when John was told to measure it, he found it was as broad as it was long. It was square. Perfect. And there are parallels between the undefiled camp and this four square undefiled city. If you care to turn to Revelation chapter 21, you'll see the likeness. Revelation chapter 21 and verse 18. Apparently, it's a transparent city. Let me ask you, if you lived in a transparent house, where could you hide? What could you hide? You couldn't hide anything. Heaven is like that. 21 and 18. The wall was built of jasper, while the city was pure gold, clear as glass. It's the first mention. Speak about living in glass houses. Imagine living in a glass city. The foundations of the wall of the city were adorned with every jewel. You get a long list of the jewels. 21. The 12 gates were 12 pearls, each of the gates made of a single pearl. And the street of the city, here it is again, was pure gold, transparent as glass. You couldn't hide in a city like that. You couldn't take sin, cherished sin, into that kind of city. It would be spotted immediately. Verse 22, greatly beloved by preachers. I saw no temple in the city, no more churches, no more pulpits, no more sermons. Marvelous. That will be heaven indeed. Why don't we need a church? For its temple is the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb. And the city has no need of sun or moon to shine upon it, for the glory of God is its light, and its lamp is the Lamb. And by its light shall the nations walk. The kings of the earth shall bring their glory into it, and its gates shall never be shut by day, and there shall be no night there. A perfect city they shall bring into it, the glory and the honor of the nations. Here we come to the camp. Nothing unclean shall enter it, nor anyone who practices abomination or falsehood, lies. No room for lies in a transparent city. But only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Nothing unclean. I've underlined these words. Nothing unclean. If there is cherished sin in your life, if there's secret sin in your heart, known, put it where it belongs, beyond the wall. Nothing unclean. If you look on to chapter 22 and verse 14, the same connections are seen. Blessed are those, chapter 22 of Revelation, yes, not Numbers, Revelation 22 and 14. Blessed are those who wash their robes, that's to say they're clean, they're on the inside, that they may have the right to the tree of life, that they may enter the city by the gates. Here it is again. Outside are the dogs, meaning the mongrels that you get outside the walls of every eastern city. Outside are the dogs. And it's an interesting collection, the people who are on the outside. Along with the dogs, you've got people who fool around with black magic, sorcerers. And then you've got people who are guilty of sexual immorality, fornicators. And then you have murderers. And then you have people who worship idols and give their money and their time and their energy to other gods. And they're all there. And everyone who loves and practices falsehood. Outside are dogs. And if you put these two together, the camp of Numbers and the city of Revelation, you can be in only one place or the other. You are either on the inside, cleansed, and part of the work of God, and part of the people of God, and on the move with Jesus, and part of the church militant on the inside, or else you are on the outside, banished and alienated in the wilderness, living in a spiritual desert. And what was true of the camp in Numbers is also true of the holy city in Revelation, because when the city comes down, there will be only two places in all the universe. You know, the old Scottish preachers used to say that when the rain started in Noah's day, there were only two places in the whole universe where you could be. You were either in the ark and safe, or you were in the water drowning. You couldn't be anywhere else. And when the city comes, there are only two places. You are on the inside, clean and safe forever. Or you are on the outside and you are banished and lost forever. There is great solemnity in the childhood hymn. There is a city bright, closed are its gates to sin. Naught that defileth can ever enter in. Closed are its gates, an undefiled city. And thirdly, it is the good news of the gospel that there is a way to be part of an undefiled camp and to be sure of a place in an undefiled city. I wonder if you notice as you read the Gospels that in his lifetime Jesus dealt with these three sorts of folk who were banished in Numbers 5. You remember how the lepers used to come to him, and we know particularly that on one occasion he spoke to the man. And then he touched the man. Now, people would have been shocked, you see, touching a leper with his sores and his emaciation. But Jesus didn't just speak to the man, he touched the man. And the difference between the word and the touch was this. Christ's word brought salvation and cleansing and pardon to the man. Just the word. And Christ would have gone away. But he didn't just speak the word of pardon and cleansing. He touched the man. Because he knew that the man needed not just pardon. He needed fellowship. He needed the touch of a human hand. And so the word saved. But the touch restored him. I can recall at the Queen's coronation, as part of the celebrations, she pronounced an amnesty for all the soldiers who had defected from the army during the Second World War. Provided they confessed the failing to the local police, I suppose, they were freely pardoned. Once they'd confessed the fact that they had betrayed the Queen and country, they were freely forgiven and the case was dropped. They received a letter through the post saying that they had received a royal pardon. And it could have stopped there. But how wonderful to get a second letter inviting you to the palace to meet the Queen. The word is one thing. The touch of fellowship is another. If you feel yourself tonight to be a spiritual leper, it's the good news of the gospel that if you come to Christ, there is a place for you in an undefiled camp. And the second case, of course, was the lady with the hemorrhage. We read about her in Luke's Gospel, and you know the story. All her life, she had been bleeding to death, and she had tried all the doctors. I'm sorry to say this with several medics in church this evening. Luke tells us she tried all the doctors, and she was nothing better, but rather the worse, and had spent all her substance paying these doctors. And at last, she met the great physician. Now, you see her problem. Her problem wasn't simply she was bleeding to death. Of course, that was a major problem. She wanted Christ to staunch the blood. Her problem was she couldn't get to church, because she had an issue, and she was banished from the worship of God. And that's what she wanted, to get back amongst God's people again. And so she touched the hem of his garment. I think out of respect for Christ, she knew that if she touched him, he would have become unclean. She touched the hem of his garment, but Jesus knew that virtue had gone out of him. And he asks in the middle of that seething crowd, "Who touched me?" Mercy. There were hundreds milling him. She touched him. It's like that today, you know. Hundreds milling around Jesus. Not many touch him. You touched Christ? It's the good news of the gospel that if you are bleeding to death spiritually, if you come to Christ, there is room in an undefiled camp for you. And lastly, there is the third group who had contacted death. The story of Christ in the Gospels is the story of a man pressing into the kingdom of death, pushing his way into this empire of death, and at last facing the king of the kingdom of death. There are three instances recorded in the Gospels. First of all, there's Jairus' daughter, who had just died. Then there was the widow of Nain's son, who had been dead about a day and was already on the way to the cemetery. Jesus is pushing in. Then there's Lazarus, who had been dead for several days. Christ is pushing in and pressing in to disarm the strong man and to steal the keys of death and hell. That's why he says in Revelation to John, "Don't be afraid. Behold, I am he that liveth and was dead. And behold, I am alive forevermore, and I have the keys of death and of hell." And it is the good news of Christ that if you have been contaminated by spiritual death, if you come to Christ, there is room in an undefiled camp for you. Do you know how Jesus did it? He went outside the camp for you. He joined the lepers. He joined the contaminated. He went out there for you. And he hung there. And he died there to bring the lepers home again. and bring home those who were bleeding to death and those who were contaminated, to bring them back to a place of cleansing and a place of fellowship. My friend, would you like to become part of an undefiled camp? Would you like at the last to be part of an undefiled city? Then you must come to Christ. You may never have come to Christ in your life. Perhaps you've been sitting under the sound of it for year after year after year. If you want to be in the camp, if you want to be sure of a place in the city, you must come to Him and surrender to Him and give your life to Him as you've never done before, and open up your heart to Him. I promise you, He will take you in. Amen. May the Lord bless the preaching of the word.